You're probably thinking, Jeff, what are you doing up here today? I thought this was our special Christmas music concert. Are you going to sing a solo or something? Fortunately for you, the answer is no. Pastor Bambi asked me if I would share a brief meditation with you before our choir leads us forward in our celebration to remind us why the birth of Jesus was the single greatest event in the history of the world, in the history of humanity. So today's sermonette will be the briefest sermon I have ever shared with you. My special Christmas present to you. Here we are already at Christmas 2024, knocking on the door. Knock, knock. Yeah. Wow, I didn't know you were so excited about Christmas. Did you hear about the gingerbread man who went to the doctor complaining of a sore knee? The doctor said to him, "Have you tried icing it?" Even the kids groaned. Instead of groaning, you should be taking careful notes, because if you share these jokes at your family Christmas party, you'll be the most popular person there, I promise you. About a month ago, I asked my spouse, "What do you most want for Christmas this year?" "Anything," I said. He said, "Nothing would make me happier than a brand new BMW. I said, "Your wish is my command," so that's what I did. I got him nothing. Because he said, "Nothing would make me happier than a BMW." Come on, keep up with me here. What is the best Christmas gift you ever got in your lifetime? Maybe you were a kid, maybe you're an adult. I'm not talking about the most expensive, but the one that you were most excited about. Somebody just call it out. The best Christmas gift you ever got in your life. What was that?
A basketball hoop.
I didn't know you were a basketball player. What was that?
A guitar.
And back there?
A Chrissy doll.
I'm not even sure what that is, but good for you.
A book of what?
A book of lifesavers. Wow. Where was I? Okay. What was it? Camping gear. Chemistry set. All right, this group had a lot better Christmas than the early service crowd. Your dad handmade stilts. Wow. And they worked. That is so cool. The best Christmas gift I ever received was given to me almost 2,000 years before I was born. And that would be the gift of Jesus. Probably most of you could say exactly the same thing, because Jesus came to give us abundant life. Jesus came to show us the way, the truth, and the life. There's a famous Christmas prophecy, a messianic prophecy found in the Old Testament in Isaiah 9, beginning at verse 6. "Unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given, and authority shall rest upon his shoulders, and his name shall be called Wonderful, Counselor, the Mighty God, the Everlasting Father, Prince of peace. Of those five titles attributed to Jesus there, it is the fifth that has become the most famous, that has most sparked our imagination. You see it on Christmas cards. What does it mean to say that Jesus is our Prince of Peace? Actually, he tells us. John chapter 14, verse 27, Jesus said, "Peace I bequeath to you." When you bequest something to someone, that means before you depart, you're leaving what you have with them. So Jesus said, "Peace I bequeath to you. My own peace I give to you. A peace the world cannot give. This is my gift to you." The promise here of Jesus is an otherworldly, heavenly peace. There's a Peanuts cartoon where Lucy is ranting and raving. She's shouting, "I hate everything. I hate everybody. I hate the whole wide world." Charlie Brown says, "But Lucy, I thought you said you had inner peace." She said, "I do have inner peace, but I still have outer obnoxiousness." That's true of a lot of Christians. Sometimes that's true of me. We want to claim to have that inner peace that Jesus promised, but it's belied by our outer obnoxiousness. What are we missing? How can we actually access Jesus' gift to us of heavenly peace? Again, he tells us. Luke chapter 6, verse 38. Jesus said, "Give, and it will be given unto you. A good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over, will be put into your lap. For the measure you give will be the measure you get back." You may think, isn't Jesus talking about financial giving in that verse? Because every time this verse is talked about, you know, some televangelist is saying, "Give me your money because God will give you back more." But that's not the original context in which Jesus spoke these words. It's a general principle that applies across our board in life, including to our finances. But the context in which Jesus originally spoke these words, the verse right before it, Jesus is talking to us about the critical importance of peacemaking and forgiving. And that then prompts him to say, "Give, and it will be given unto you. A good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over, will be put back in your lap, because the measure you give will be the measure you get back." Think about what that means. Let me close with a story from my childhood. This was one of the formative experiences of my childhood. I'll never forget the lesson I learned from this. When I was growing up, we lived way out in the countryside near Acton, Indiana, and we loved having the wide open spaces. Our closest neighbor was about a football field length from us, our house, and then an acre of vacant lot, and then our nearest neighbor. Wide open spaces. But then one day, some city slickers bought the lot in between us and our neighbors, and proposed to put in a house on that lot way too big for the size of the lot. In order to build that house, they would need a zoning variance so that they could build right up to the property lines. We, of course, opposed that, but they got their variance. We're sure they bribed the person who made the decision. So let's just say we were not happy about these city slickers moving in to our neighborhood. Before they began their house, things went from bad to worse. One Saturday morning, we were awakened by the sound of a chainsaw. We looked out our bedroom windows, and there was Ed Nelson and a buddy of his with a chainsaw, who were about to cut down several old growth trees that needed to be removed so that they could have somebody build their house. So I guess they were going to save some money and do the tree cutting themselves. We're talking about 70-foot trees. I remember my mom saying, as we looked out the window, "They have no idea what they're doing." We watched as they cut and they cut. And then timber, the first tree fell right on top of our neighbor's roof. It was like a bomb. I'll never forget this. It was like a bomb exploded on their roof. And one big branch made its way spear-like through their house and almost speared their young boy who was still sleeping in bed. Let's just say by the time the city slicker Nelsons moved into their brand new fancy house, they were persona non grata in our neighborhood. They were disturbing the peace of our neighborhood. And frankly, we detested them. They had built on our side their big city slicker blacktop driveway, because we didn't have blacktop driveways out there then. Their blacktop driveway came right up to the edge of our property line. And when Ed Nelson backed his big old 98 out of the garage, the whole back end of that thing, he'd have to back it to the edge of the driveway, and the whole back end would hang over our property. Galling. One day, Dad had an idea. He went out. And he drove three metal stakes right on our property line so that when Ed backed his olds out, he'd have to back up, pull forward, back up, pull, kind of wedge it out of the garage. So you get the picture, right? The peace, the tranquility of our neighborhood had been destroyed by these enemies, these aliens. One day, we were sitting in our backyard around the fire pit. Ed was out in his backyard, barely 30 feet away. It was almost sunset. He was wrapping up some yard work. We were pretending he wasn't there. He was pretending we weren't there. When my dad hollered at him, I thought, oh no, what's going to happen? Dad shouted at him, "Hey, neighbor, why don't you grab your family and come over and let's have a beer together." "What? Dad? Don't you know these are our enemies? We're supposed to hate them." Ed stood there dumbfounded for a second. And they said, "Okay." Went inside, got his wife, two little kids. They came over. We sat around the fire pit. We roasted marshmallows and made s'mores and had roasted hot dogs. And Dad and Ed shared a beer. And it was like a miracle. To me, as a kid watching this, our neighborhood had been in an uproar. We were in an uproar. One moment. And in a miracle moment, Dad changed all of that by saying, "Hey, neighbor, come over, have a beer." War? Peace. Like Jesus calming the sea. It was a miracle. I was blown away at the power of peacemaking. And it wasn't just peace restored in the neighborhood, it was peace restored in us. If you want to have peace, you have to give it. Amen. Give, and it will be given unto you. Good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over. If Jesus is the Prince of Peace, then we who follow him should be princes and princesses of peace. Mike Driscoll, you've always wanted to be a princess, and this is your opportunity. We who follow Jesus should be princes and princesses of peace. Blessed are the peacemakers. They shall be called the children of peace. Of God. So in this Christmas season, who do you need to make peace with? If you want to have peace, you got to give it. That's what our Prince of Peace says. Are we listening? Jesus, you are the greatest gift ever. Amen.